Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Imam Benjamin Bilal, signing on as the host of American Muslim 360's Blog Talk Radio, the sacred and secret language of religion and culture, which is what I host, as well as the Hour of Health Power, which will be coming to you momentarily, hosted by my wife and my best friend, Karima Medina Bilal. For those of you who might not be aware, we are at the DoubleTree Hotel in Somerset, New Jersey, enjoying the festivities at this year's annual Islamic convention hosted by the Mosque Cares. And there are plenty of people here, thousands of people here. It's just wonderful to be in the company of the believers wherever you may find them. And it's a blessing for us and a mercy for us that we're able to gather together at this time. We've had a very successful, you know, I told you guys, I don't like to call these Ramadan sessions, you know, so I choose for myself and those who follow my logic to call what I do Ramadan teachings. I reserve the term Ramadan session specifically for what Imam W.D. Muhammad established, and I don't think any of us are qualified to do anything behind him with the same title that he used. So that's just my individual logic. I don't fault anybody for doing it. I will present that argument to them, and hopefully that by this time next year, inshallah, the language will be corrected. So, again, we are here. It is a bright, beautiful, sunshiny day. We have our live audience making their way up the stairs towards this outdoor patio gazebo. And inshallah, if there are too many of us to sit under the patio, then we will take it outside of the perimeter of the patio and continue to express what it is we have to present to you today. We're going to be pretty much free-flowing. I'm going to turn the session over to my wife after we open up with al-Fatiha. And it's just going to be free-flowing, you know, like the rappers say, you know. We won't be battling. We'll just be giving out information, consistent information, important information. So if you'll give us 1 minute to make an adjustment, we will go full-fledged into the presentation for today. Thank you. Okay, so again, assalamu alaikum. We may have to make a minor readjustment. You want us to come up here? You okay? All right. Yeah, can you hear okay from up there? Oh, okay. All right. So they're making adjustments to make sure that you know how black folks are. We go in the place, start rearranging the furniture. That's what's happening right now. For those of you can't see, huh? Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I had so much sunshine, you know, between the teachings and what we did yesterday. That my melanin is full right now. So I'm not trying to push it. I'm not trying to be an extremist. All right? But there's a nice breeze up under this gazebo, and I'm saying that to tease you guys who are not here. Nice, bright, sunshiny day. After they thought a storm would be coming through, nothing at all happened, at least in the area where we are. And they called the storm Earl, so we know that that was a black storm, like my wife said. You know? Yeah, if it had been Charlie or, you know, James or Evans or something like that, it'd be different. When they start naming them Earl. Yeah. That becomes quite cosmic. You know, black hole might have produced that one. I mean, if you can move that just a little bit, I'd get everybody working with that. Well, I don't know. All right, so we're going to open up with al-Fatiha and get into what it is we have to get into for today, inshallah. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين. صدق الله العظيم. Allah certainly speaks the truth. So I bring before you my wife and my dear friend Karima Medina Bilal, who will be presenting you. No, just straight. who will be presenting you with her Hour of Health Power, which may or may not be an hour today because we're not going to go the full length or the full run of our show today because of the other activities that we're involved in here and also because we're hooking into a cell phone and we don't have an electric charge. So if you lose us, you know what happens. And I know that's ghetto too, but that's just how we're rolling right now. All right. Praises be to Allah. So we're going to set our timer. So we'll give you a good 45 minutes, and after that we're going to do some free flow, questions and answers and that kind of thing, whatever's on your mind. Unfortunately, our listening audience won't be able to call in today because we're not in front of a computer because we're not at our central location. So just bear with us, and inshallah, you will still be able to get the goodies. Send us your signal. Send us your question via telepathy. You know how they used to tell us, put our hand on the radio for some healing? All right? Well, just hold on to your cell phone and send that message right through that phone, and inshallah, we'll be able to pick up the vibration from that. Yeah, for those who are just tuning in, we are at the annual Muslim convention sponsored by the Mosque Cares in Somerset, New Jersey, at the wonderful Doubletree Hotel. Doubletree Hotel. And also, for those of you who might be listening on the phone who need to know where we are at the in the gazebo adjacent to the swimming pool. Adjacent, we're not in the swimming pool. We are at the gazebo adjacent to the swimming pool in a patio area. If you come up or up the stretch of canopy, you'll make a left up. Is it up the stairs or down the stairs? Yeah, you'll make a left first, up the stairs. If you're coming out of that door, yeah, you'll make a left, and then you'll make something, and then you'll ask white folks where we are. That's how we're going to do that. That's how I know who I'm dealing with. That's just it. Where's the swimming pool, man? All right. So all praise be to Allah. Got some youth showing up here. Brother got a shirt that says, stay fly. I like it. Go ahead. All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the history of our people, staying fly. We were fly during slavery. You know that? That's right. We were getting fashion during slavery. Much as we could. All right. Is my wife ready? All right, so I turn it over to her. We're light-spirited today. Ramadan Mubarak to all. And inshallah, soon to be Eid Mubarak. All right? So maintain. As-salamu alaykum.
As-salamu alaykum. Peace and love and blessings to each and every one of you, wherever you are. If you are not here at the convention, you're missing, among other things, a fashion show because the sisters are drop-dead gorgeous. When we roll out, we roll out. And when we want to be seen, we are worthy to be seen. And the beautiful thing is, it's nobody's legs, it's nobody's boom boom, it's nobody's nothing that's being shown. It's all halal, it's all covered, and it's African regal, and it's gorgeous. And I'm very proud to be a Muslim sister right here. If you could see me, you'd see that I have on a Muhammad Ali t-shirt, and he's standing there baring his teeth with his fist clenched after he just knocked out Sonny Liston. And I got on an Applejack hat that's broke at a very, very sharp angle to the right because that's just how I'm feeling today. I got my bamboo earrings on, and they're down to my shoulders, and I'm feeling particularly black. That's just what it is today. I'm feeling black and proud to be so. It's from that era where we said it loud, and we were black, and we were proud. That's how I'm feeling today, and that's the spirit that I'm rolling in today, and that's what I want to invoke. First, I must, however, invoke Allah and ask Allah to please bless whatever it is that I'm going to say, to take myself, my human self, and put it far in the back and allow myself to be a vehicle of the divine so that my voice will express Allah's words and my ego and my agenda become secondary and submissive to the agenda of Allah, which is always for the highest good of humanity, inshallah. So alhamdulillah, as you know, this is the hour of power. And Allah blessed me to come up with something today that really struck me in a wonderful way. And what that was this thought. That was that medicine, you know how in the Quran Allah says that they write the book with their own hands? And how they take things and they divide them up into sects. As a woman of science and a practitioner of the healing arts as well as medicine, I realized something that seems very simple and right in front of the nose, but I didn't pick up on before. And that is, you cannot separate what goes on in your body from your life, the life that you're living, your lifestyle. You see, because when you separate your life from your body, where I come from, that's death. When the life leaves the body and becomes separate from the body, that's death. So what they've done on a down low, and when I say they, I'm not speaking about your doctor. We're not talking about the human being, your doctor. We're talking about the medical establishment, which is in league with big business, which is in league with greed, avarice, and the other four horsemen of the apocalypse, and the other seven deadly sins, among them chiefly greed. That's the ones that I'm speaking out against. And they have done just, they separate what you do and how you live from the results that you get in your body so that you forget that when the lights come on in your body, as they do on your dashboard, those are not causes. Those are symptoms. And so while I was here, I had people come over to me and express to me their health concerns. And what I all heard them say was, I have the four husbands. The Allah allowed men four wives. But women, unconsciously, after a certain age, pick up four husbands. Sugar, Alpha, Pressure, and Lester. Lester being cholesterol. Pressure being high blood pressure. Sugar being sugar diabetes. Author being arthritis. And they're high maintenance. These are high maintenance things that you become attached to. And you become married to them for life to the extent that most women, once they get 50, expect that you're just going to have arthritis. You just expect that you're going to have high blood pressure. All of us, men folks as well, expect that you're going to have these diseases. When in fact, they are brought upon the self. We bring them upon each other with our own hands. That's what's meant by writing the book with your own hands. Now, my husband shared something wonderful with me. He said, you are the kitab. I was playing with this. I said, you know, it said that Prophet Muhammad was the Quran walking. And since Prophet Muhammad was a human being and everything that he does, we have a right to expect we are capable of, yea, though we are not divine, let's say, as divinely inspired as he was. So if he was the Quran walking, so might we be. And my husband was telling me, even though I don't have the Arabic at the tip of my tongue the way he would, to break it down, that we are the kitab. And in it, the Quran, are instructing signs, since each ayat is a sign. But most of us go unmindful and heedless. And that translates into the world of health. Because every time your body, which was created on the fitra, starts to ache, complain, show signs of pain, fatigue, degeneration, that is a sign to you that something you are doing, some way that you are living, is out of the fitra. And what we're supposed to do is take heed, stop, look, listen to your heart and what it's saying. I don't know if that was the shy-like, the delphonic, the stylistic. But you have to stop, look, listen to the innate intelligence that Allah put in you and hear what it's saying. But most of us choose not to do that. And I want to give a shout-out here to women. I'm telling you, sisters, and I'm not just saying sisters of color. I'm saying women all over the world, we are some bad mama jammas. And I say that with as much respect and love as I can muster, because we bear a significant burden. It's a huge burden. And what do I mean by that? I mean that We, in addition to being human beings in charge of our own bodies, we have to, many of us working, many of us coming home, raising children, taking care of the husband, in addition to holding down the 9-to-5. So as I was at my table, a lot of sisters came over, and as I was massaging feet and rubbing hands, I felt so sorry for some of us. And it's an interesting thing. If you look at your feet, you get a very interesting feel for how many miles that person has walked. It'll give you a very interesting insight into their personality to look at their feet. And you look at the ankles, and you see sisters, and the ankles are swollen. And a lot of people just take it for granted that when you get to be a certain age, your feet are going to swell, your ankles are going to swell, and you're just going to be tired, weary, and broke down. To which I say, no, no, no. If I wasn't speaking into the phone, I would shout it at the top of my lungs, no, it does not have to be that way. And the only reason that it is that way is because we are not taking care of our horses. Yes, we're not taking care of our horses. Now, what does Karima Medina Bilal mean when she says that? Do you remember the Westerns? And a man was so attached to his horse that the worst thing that you could be was a horse thief? You could be a lot of things, but if somebody called you a horse thief, that was playing the dozens at all the way off the meter, because it was recognized and it was realized and generally expected that the horse was necessary for a person's livelihood in the West, not just in the West, but all over, because how were you going to get from place A to place B if not for your horse? You would have to walk. You could not plow your fields without a horse or a mule or a donkey or some other beast of burden. Huh? In the desert, they're camels. But now, what happens is, since we've all gotten cars, we have forgotten that your conveyances require care and feeding. And if you didn't know it, citizens of the world, do know that you are living in your body, but you are not your body. Wrap your brains around that. I know we're fasting, and many of us have monkey brains because we're fasting. Many of us have gotten up early, went to sleep late, and are walking around in that very nice kind of a gentle fog, that fast-induced haze. It's a peace that you see in many of us. What I'm saying is that you live inside of your body, and in the same way that a horse will throw you off if you ride him wrong, you ride your body wrong, and your body will evict you. That's what happens when you die. Your body evicts you. You get kicked out, dispossessed, put out. Allah calls you back. So, in the same way that you would not whip your horse, why do we drive our bodies the same way that we do? I was talking to sisters, and they would tell me as they were seated, they say, well, you know, now I'm fasting and I didn't eat, but many a day goes by when I don't eat lunch. We're fasting, I'm not drinking water, but many the day goes by when I don't drink for days. I don't drink. Now think about that. Everywhere you would go in the West, just look at the movies. They always had a horse, a water trough for the horses to drink. What animal would you expect to work for you that you do not feed and give water to? How humane is that? For many of us, if there was a society that would look out for the prevention of treatment to humans, we'd all get indicted for the way that we treat our bodies. It is a shame. It is a shame. And worse than that, we're going to have to answer to Allah for what we did. So I was speaking about women and women's burdens and how women have dual and triple layers of responsibility. Responsibility to the self, to take care of self, to manifest that mission for which Allah commissioned you. We tend to forget that in the sacrifices that are made for husbands, for families, but we have a mission. And the omission of that mission will get you in Dutch, will get you in bed with Allah on the day of judgment. So sisters in particular, when you listen to this, remember your mission. And indeed, the existential crisis that a lot of people get into, the overachievers and the people that get so detached from the fitra that they forget what it is that they're really put on this earth to do, there is no such thing upon someone who realizes that their mission should be the same as their work and that your work should be the same as your job. But many of us, again, divide our lives into sects. So your job is what you do when you go to work. Your mission, eventually you'll figure it out. But most of us don't get it until way late in life, and we realize with a deep sense of regret and remorse that what we have been about is not what we should have been about. And that's called midlife crisis and depression. So inshallah, women, make sure, not just women, but this is also a shout out to the brothers. I want to give a special shout out to my husband. He's your imam and your teacher, but he's my husband. And this is one of the hardest working men in show business. With all due respect and a nod of my Applejack hat to the right to James Brown. This is one of the hardest working brothers in show business. And he has my full respect for the effort that he's been putting into getting ready for this convention, the work that he puts into getting ready for you students, and the work that he puts into his service for Allah. He has my respect, he has my gratitude, and he has my prayers that Allah will continue to strengthen him. And moreover, he has my commitment to help him in the furtherance of his mission. Inshallah. Now, in the course of what I was doing yesterday, I had the wonderful opportunity to meet a couple. Now, you're going to find me just touching on different topics. There's no one theme that I'm going to be developing specifically, except that when you separate your life from your body, that equals death. And your life and the issues that you face have to do with the choices that you make. And when you can choose what you're doing, when you can choose what to do, you'll either reap the benefits or suffer the consequences. That's the theme. So there's lots of different scenes in that theme as I make my presentation. This couple that I met that stopped by my table were absolutely wonderful in that they were like two grown-up kids. Now, most of us forget that. Most of us forget that when you become an adult, what you really are is a grown-up child with responsibility. I tell my children that all the time. I'm a kid just like you. The difference is that I have bills and responsibilities. But that playfulness, that spirit of energy and youthfulness was so present in these two that it really was refreshing. And what they told me was that at home, they actually have a massage table. And that husband massages wife, and wife massages husband. And I thought that was the coolest thing. I thought that was the coolest thing because in that way, not only will you establish intimacy, which is different than sexual relations, if you didn't know it. No, I'm not going there during Ramadan. I just made that subject in a clinical reference. Astaghfirullah, stop it. It is that you will establish intimacy and the joy of the human touch. The joy of the human touch. And I was doing his feet in the presence of my husband and his wife, and he said that he had pain in his neck and his back. And so his wife was doing his neck while I was doing his feet. And I swear we saw him make an ascension. When he saw the brother, when he got up, his whole color had changed. And he got up and he all but skipped around the table. He was a happy little boy, if I may say that with all respect. Now, why doesn't the man in your life deserve that? Why doesn't the woman in your life deserve that? For no reason except that we've simply chosen not to do it. And why do we do that? Because we have other seeming, I asked them, well, why don't you all, she said, we used to do this, you know. I said, well, what made you stop? He said, oh, we just got too busy doing other things. So the reminder here is, what is more important than your relationship? What is more important than your health? I guarantee you, if you keel over and fall dead at your desk, after the ambulance and the undertaker come to take your body, they will find someone to replace you, and they will not miss a beat. So, make sure we keep clear, on what our priorities are, and chief among them, our health, because without our health, we have nothing. Without our health, nothing else matters. Now, that led me to something else. That led me to remember the dedication that I had made in all my talks to Harriet Tubman. I will continue to reference Harriet Tubman with the intention that all of us should keep her as a historical reference and as a source of strength. And what do I mean by that? Here's a brief refresher in history. Harriet Tubman was one of the most actualized human beings that walked the planet. She was a woman who was not, quote-unquote, educated, meaning a woman of letters, but as I understand, neither lettered, meaning indoctrinated. She didn't get to go to school, but they frequently referred to Prophet Muhammad as the Mu'id prophet, Umid, thank you, Umid prophet, and some people will say that that means unlettered or illiterate. What I submit that it means was that he was not indoctrinated into any particular school of thought. He was indoctrinated into Allah's sitra. That was his qibla, not so much the established orders of things. Now, how am I linking that to Harriet Tubman? Harriet Tubman helped the United States win the Civil War. Now, if you didn't know it, Harriet Tubman was a general. And she didn't get her military honors until she was buried with full military honors in Auburn, New York. And everyone should make a pilgrimage there, by the way. It's in Auburn, New York. It's 5 hours northwest of New York City. And there you will see her grave, and she's buried with military honors. But during her life, she was an undecorated general without which the United States could not have won the Civil War. Harriet Tubman had relationships with the Indians. Harriet Tubman, through her work with the Underground Railroad, knew all the hiding places and the ins and outs and the marshes and the bushes and the places where the rabbits wouldn't go. Harriet Tubman spoke the Indian languages. Harriet Tubman knew how to navigate by stars. Harriet Tubman had the ability to motivate and to lead people, but she never went to West Point, and she was never commissioned an officer by any governing body. She declared her mission according to Allah, and Allah gave her her stripes. That is worthy of a top beer. Allahu Akbar. She was, and in that, William Seward, who was the Secretary of State, enlisted her help, helped recruit the slaves because the Yankees was getting killed off. We was getting our butts beat, people. The Confederates were winning. But when Harriet Tubman was able to rally the slaves and to set up the field hospitals in North and South Carolina and the Deep South, where the dengue fever and the mosquitoes and all those other swamp diseases that the Yankee Northmen were not ready for, had it not been for her knowledge of herbs, she was a master herbalist, they'd have died. Folks would have just died outright in the story. My point in saying this is that she educated herself. She did not wait until someone conferred a degree upon her to do what she saw needed to be done. And the result for that was that she healed and she helped and she freed hundreds, if not thousands, of people. That was no small accomplishment, given the fact that she had been injured as an adolescent and suffered severe head trauma. She had her head caved in by a paving stone by an ignorant, savage slave master. As she got in the path of an escaped slave to protect the slave from the slave master at 14 years old, she was gangster like that. So I say to us who think that we cannot achieve because the excuse we've used for so many years, the white man won't let us. That doesn't hold anymore. If you think you can't do it, fess up and accept it. It's because you're not ready to do it. Because when she was ready to be free, she made the decision, I'm going to be free, I'm going to die in the trying. And sure enough, without being able to read a map, to know anything, as a slave with seizures that rendered her unconscious at random intervals, she freed herself. And then she came back on foot, and she freed hundreds of others. What excuse, I ask you, do we, in 21st century United States, with as much as we have, and with the Quran, do we have for not achieving? What excuse do we have? What she taught me was that in the big leagues, excuses don't matter. However valid they are, in the big leagues, excuses don't matter. And the one whom Allah protects, truly, 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 none can overcome. So alhamdulillah, back to the study and back to the body, the care and feeding of your horse. One of the things that actually got under my skin, may Allah help me, was that as I was doing this massage, people would say to me, where is your car? Where is your office? Where is your studio? And I said, I have none, because really, I'm not in this as a business. I'm simply doing this as a service to the sisters who I know are walking around in high-heeled shoes for hours on a concrete floor, on cushions, high-heeled shoes on a concrete floor. And I know that reflexology has taught us, demonstrated, that all the organs of your body have a point on your feet, all of them, and that pounding those organs on that concrete cannot be good. So just as a service to Allah and as a means to connect with my sisters, I was offering this service. And then somebody said, well, you know, if you do that, you don't have a license, they can make you go to jail or fine you or something. And I got so angry when I heard that, not at the person, but because I realized the truth in that. And that set me back on to remember what I call the five freedoms. That's part of my program, the five body fitness. It's also five body freedom. You have a right to knowledge. And I understand that there are protections. There's a difference between regulation and restriction. There's a difference between regulation and restriction. Regulations are set up for the protection of the public. We don't want people expecting one thing because of claims that are made and then going to purchase that service and then finding out that they're given something different because the people who say they can do it actually don't know how to do it and they're just ripping people off. That's valid. That's valid. Restriction and unnecessary governmental intervention is really what's done with taxes. A lot of that stuff is just done. You have to register and get a license to do something just because they want to know who you are so they can collect money on your taxes. This, I see this in evidence. How long, sisters, have we been braiding hair? Since Africa. But do you know now that if you braid hair, they want you to get a license to braid hair. They want you to go to cosmetology school to braid hair. And we've been doing it for how long have they been Africans on the earth? That's how long we've been doing it. What's the point of that? Well, sure, to be sure, if you're going to do something for somebody, you don't want to transmit germs from one person to another. I understand that. That's regulation. And to say to people, okay, you have to take a certain course in hygiene or whatever, so you're doing sanitation, that also makes sense. Make everybody bring their own combs and stuff. That makes sense. But to make you have to take a course and pay good money to do something that you already know how to do, really what they're doing is they just want to get a bead on you, know where you are, so they can make you pay tax on it. That, to me, is unnecessary governmental interference. And I thought about that with the whole idea of massage. Think about it. The first massage therapists were your mothers. Mm. Everybody who picks up a baby instinctively knows that when the baby cries, you pat him and you rub him. Huh? If he seems to be in pain, you massage his little feet, you massage his little back, you pick him up, you touch him, you touch her, and somewhere in that transfer of energy from those hands, that baby derives relief. How many mothers have stayed up all night with their children massaging? Now, this is before, you have to understand something about the history of medicine. Before we had doctors and HMOs, we had wise women, we had medicine men, medicine women, we had shamans, we had people who were recognized to have a certain healing energy.
Right.
Huh? And what would happen is, once you as a child were recognized to have that energy, you would be linked to somebody else in the village who had more experience doing that. That's how midwives were created, right? Years past, it wasn't the whole idea of obstetrics and gynecology being a subspecialty of a larger medical entity business establishment. There were midwives. There was your aunt so-and-so who never went to a medical school who delivered babies. That's the way it was until men folks realized how much money there was in it. And over, even to this day, wet midwives have lower rates of complications than doctors do. Yes. Even to where they had to teach the doctors to wash their hands before delivering babies. They used to come from doing the autopsies and then deliver babies without washing their hands. Until Semmelweis and others of the pioneers there said, look at the midwives. They're washing their hands with tinctures of this and tinctures of that and alcohols, and their rates of childbirth fever are a fraction of what yours are. Idiots, wash your hands. Huh? But the arrogance in that, they fought Semmelweis. They fought him hard, just like they fight anybody else. The medical establishment, mind you, the business of medicine, those who profit from human misery, those ones are the ones that I'm railing against. Not your humane, conscious, God-fearing provider. See, but that's where the schism occurred. At the point when they separated God from healing,
yeah,
you got medicine the business. And the art of healing was lost and relegated to people who were supposed to be quacks and insignificant. Gourd shakers, incense burners, quacks, but they kept people alive for centuries before doctors came on the set. Hmm? So back to massages. Mothers have always been the masters of healing touch. This is a shout out for mothers. Hmm? Think of it. It has always been the human response when an injury is suffered, to grab it, to hold it, to protect it, and to rub it. So a child falls down, mommy runs over to him and says, okay, let me rub it, let me kiss it and make it feel better. But always to rub it, the transfer of energy, of love-healing energy, healing touch. That's always been our legacy. So how come it is now that in order to do that, you got to have a license? People don't care that it's Swedish or that it's Reiki or that it's whatever it is, as long as they feel better after they leave. All that other stuff is academic. And you had, in order to be a graduate of one of those schools, it costs thousands of dollars. And this is my other rant and rave against the institutions. This is where greed comes in. Look at the number of people that need help. To restrict all of that by charging the ridiculous amounts of money that they charge for you to get that instruction goes against the desire to want to see people get well. Do you know that to become a physical therapist now, you have to have a PhD? Look at all the people that need physical therapy. You would think that people would have paid attention to what the Chinese did. In China, there was a doctor named Dr. George Hatem, H-A-T-E-M, and he is credited with being called the barefoot doctor. What he did was he helped eradicate syphilis, or he declared a war on syphilis in China around the time that opium was rampant in China and the British were holding China. What he did was to go there, and he would go into a village, and he would teach somebody in the village that was instrumental, that was a leader, that had the right stuff. He would teach them what was required to treat and cure the syphilis. And he went, and then that one would go and teach one, and that one would go and teach one, until you had a whole army of quote-unquote unlettered, not necessarily doctor folks, who just went through the countryside and eradicated syphilis in China. Look at America, people. Look at how many people there are that need healing. Look at the people that need help. But to be a physical therapist or to be a massage person, right, this is not to say that there should not be compensation for what whenever a service is done. Like if you're teaching someone something, sure, you should be compensated. And we know that it costs money to run institutions. But they fixed what this really is gatekeepers. After you get a master's in something, the rest of it's writing dissertations. The rest of it is just overkill. But they want you to spend these thousands of dollars so that they can restrict the number of people who get to have that credential. Therefore, you can keep the supply low and the demand high. That's the kind of thing that I'm talking about when I speak against the medical establishment. That's greed. And the result of it is that people who need the service can't get it. That's wrong. We should not support such. And that's also for us to know that it is in order for you to take your health back into your own hands, you may not be able to charge a fee for doing a particular service. That's going to get you in trouble with the authorities. But there's nothing stopping you from learning, opening books, and studying so that you can help yourself. Now, in my closing remarks, I want us all to study the body. Study your body. Open a book. Start with a children's book on anatomy. Learn the parts of your body. I have two arms, two legs, two feet, two eyes, two ears, one brain, hopefully, although we have left and right, and we have these other levels of consciousness. That'll come later. But learn about your body. People that want to restrict the knowledge gave it a fancy word and called it they called it biology. But what is it? It's the study of life. You are alive. You're a walking laboratory. Study yourself. Before they find a way to restrict the flow of information on the Internet, study. You ever wonder why your breath smells in the morning? Those of you who are fasting, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Your breath smells when you wake up in the morning, because there are bacteria in your mouth which you cannot see. And their waste products cause odor. Well, the study of life that you cannot see is called microbiology. Huh? So study what goes on in your body. Who cares if you never get a degree in microbiology? If you understand why your underarms smell, why you will get sick if you don't wash, why food smells when it spoils, this is practical. This is your life. If you cook, you have to know these things. If you eat, you have to know these things. If you're alive, you have to know these things. Do not wait for a degree to be conferred upon you by someone in order to get, keep, and nurture the thirst for learning. If you want to understand Allah's intentions and Allah's intention for you, study His creation. Study the fitra. Study the animals. Study the life around you. Everything that you see in the creation will have a corollary somewhere, somehow, in your body. And once you do that, you will begin to enter the ranks of the ones like George Washington Carver. This is another unlettered scientist. He is a scientist par excellence. But as far as I know, he didn't go to any schools and get any degrees to do that. And as far as I know, Jesus did not attend divinity school. Prophet Muhammad did not attend prophet school. Allah conferred upon people a certain intelligence, a certain gift, a certain inspiration. And what makes them different from us was that they listened to it and they followed it. Harriet Tubman listened to hers, freed herself, and freed others. Allah blessed me with a certain amount of it. I'm expanding upon it as best I can to free myself, and in that process of freeing myself, inshallah, I'm helping to free others. I'll close by saying that as Harriet Tubman said it, I freed hundreds of slaves, but I could have freed hundreds more if only they knew that they were slaves. I'm suggesting to you that if you are sick, you are a slave. Learn about your body. Learn the excellence in which Allah created it, and free yourself. No one has a greater investment in your freedom than you. No one has the responsibility to maintain and protect yourself, your body, or your health than you. And if you don't do it, who will? So with your 40 minutes of healing power, this has been Allah's servant and your sister, Karima Medina Bilal. And for any good that came out of this, all the praise goes to Allah. For any mistakes that were made, as Brother Malcolm said, the mistakes are mine. I pray Allah will bless you to enjoy this beautiful day. I'm getting ready to pass the phone to your imam, my friend and my husband, Imam Benjamin Bilal. And I pray Allah will bless you with a peaceful and productive day. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Takbir.
Takbir.
Thank you again, my wonderful wife and my wonderful friend, Karima Medina Bilal, for her always very inspiring words related to our health and the practical things that need to be done in order for us to bring ourselves back to health. If we're out of health, and most of us have been trained to condition ourselves to be unhealthy in a culture like the one in which we exist in. I didn't say we live in it. I said we exist in it. Because if you are not at your maximum in terms of what Allah designed for your life, you are not maximizing on the potential that Allah put into your components that he created for you, then you are merely existing and have as of yet to do those things that will bring you into the fold of living, things that live. Every other creature plays out its life or its life form within the areas that Allah created for them. There are some creatures that fly and live on earth. There are some creatures that live on earth and live in the water. And there are creatures that live specifically in the water. But whatever Allah carved out as a lifestyle for them or a life form for them, they fulfill the totality of that life form unless the human being interferes. So the human interference can take that animal that was living in the jungle and put it in a cage or in a circus or behind some bars and call it a zoo. And the fulfillment of its life form cannot be realized for that particular creature because man interfered for entertainment purposes or for other purposes. So the human being is the only creature on earth that has the ability to interfere with the life form and the life scheme of other creatures. And if he has done that against the lion and against the tiger and against the other animals and the other creatures on earth that Allah placed in certain geographical locations so that they could maximize what it is Allah created them for, if he has done that with the animal life, imagine the violation that certain human beings, quote unquote, have committed against other human beings in taking us away from the fullness of what Allah intended for us as a life form. And we know that health is the primary concern when we talk about that life form. And once we begin to get ourselves into better health, all of the other necessary components will begin to fall in line, and we'll have a better existence. So yes, Karima, for those of you who missed the initial part of her presentation, she mentioned that she mentioned the kitab, which is an Arabic word from the Quran and in the Arabic lexicon, and kitab means book. And she referenced the kitab as being equated with the body, the human being's body. And the kitab is actually to be equated also with the human being's life. So when Allah says, this is the book, or this is the kitab, and that there is no raib, or there is no doubt in it, think about that kitab also as your body, right? If you thought about the kitab as your body, that would bring you into better health. Believing that Allah said that in your body there should be nothing in there that causes doubt within the body. When a foreign agent enters the body, there are soldiers, there are warriors that go to work because they have doubt that you might not belong there. That germ doesn't belong here, right? So they begin to amass their confederation and their forces to first of all, seek it out, check it out, see what it is. And if it doesn't belong there, then forces go into play immediately to curtail that enemy force, that foreign agent, and do away with that foreign agent so that the body can return to its normal fitra. That is the sense that is clocked into the biology that Allah created. And that is a part of your personal kitab. Your personal kitab. But kitab also has other inferences. For those of you who understand the Arabic language, at least on the primary level of knowing all of the Arabic letters in the system, you know that kitab is made up of the letters kaf, which would be the English K, ta, which would be the English T, and the letter that they call ba, which I call bait, which would be the English letter B, kataba. It means that he wrote a thing. It has to do with writing. Writing, kataba. Kitab is the word. Kitab is the word for book, something that contains writing. Well, your body contains writing in the form of your DNA. In your chromosome, there are DNA components that science says is full of information, full of a language that God designed for your existence. to assist you in areas where you might not be cognizant or conscious of what is going on. Information in the DNA surpasses what you might have learned or not learned consciously and begins to go to work to solve problems for you, to keep your body in a situation of wholeness. So if you have a minor cut on your finger, your consciousness does not have to look at it and suggest anything to it in order for it to heal itself. You have natural, inborn, innate information that Allah created within the context of your biology that itself, with your conscious participation or not, will go to healing that particular area of your body. To do what? Make it whole again. Make it whole again. So Kitab, let us look at these three letters. And we're actually going to stay there, be there, and conclude there. We're not going to overtax people today. It's the fasting, and we're happy, and we have a whole lot of things to do here at the convention, and people have to check out of their hotels and do a whole lot of other things today. So we're not going to keep you that long. But let's just go over these three letters, and that should suffice for today, inshallah. The letter Kaf, K-A-F, means the palm of your hand. The palm of the hand. There are two letters in Arabic that mean the hand. The Kaf represents your open hand, where you can see the palm, and the palm represents that which you are able to contain things with or contain things in. The other letter, which we won't just get into detail in, is the letter Ya, the last letter. And it represents the hand, but as a closed fist. As a closed fist. So when you grab hold of something, that's Ya. That's why the word for hand is Yad. Yet, it begins with ya. All right? You hold on to it, you grab it, you have it secure, or you use it to defend yourself. So you'll find out as you study these letters that ya also represents knowledge or information. That's why Allah calls those verses in the Quran ayat. Ayat. You see that ya at work? And Allah says that they are instructing signs. That's how they translate it. Instructing signs. So whatever is in that ya represents information for human life. It's the last letter of the alphabet, which means that you should have conquered all of the other alphabet if you already know ya. We begin with alif, end with ya. Once you end with ya, you should be able to spell any word in the Arabic lexicon. Powerful, powerful letter. Ya. Your ya, or that knowledge, or that information, represents that which you can ball up and defend yourself with. It's the information that you use, even in the presence of your enemies that want to fight you. You fight them with knowledge. You fight them with better information, complete information. And you use it to grasp hold of the reality that Allah has set forth before you. In fact, when we understand a thing, we call it grasping the information, right? We're able to grasp the information. If something has gotten away from you in terms of understanding, then the fingers were a little loose, right? All right. Now, getting back to the letter Kaf. Kaf represents the open hand, where you can see each individual digit called fingers and thumb. And those five digits represent also your five senses. Your five senses in what form? Your five senses when they are open. Right? They say that your senses are like what, a parachute? It doesn't work for you until you open it, until they're open. So if you don't open your senses to created matter, to the world that Allah created around you, then your intelligence will not grow. Your intellect will not be stimulated. Your information body will not increase. So Kaf represents that which gives you an open disposition to what Allah has created and put before you to study. That's Kaf. The letter Ta, the one with the two dots on it, looks like a little U and then two dots on top of it. That letter, Ta, represents a connection. It means to connect. Ta,
Anytime you see that letter ta, and in English it would be the letter T, it means that two things have been joined together or have intersected. If you think about the small t in the English letter, you will see that it represents a vertical bar and then a horizontal bar going across. Where they intersect is the tap point. That's why they call it T. And many of the words that are used in the English language that begin with T represent an intersection or a joining of some sort, like the word together, like the word tether, like the word tie, like the word T-O, to. I am going to the store. You are going to connect with the store. Or there are two of us sitting here at the gazebo. There are you and I, and we are joined at the gazebo. Or I will go also, right? Another word for also, I will go T-O-O with you to the store. T-O-O. It means not just you, but me too, right? So this T gives the meaning of being together, being tethered together, right? Where do they get that? They get that from the fitra, from the mother who breastfeeds. Now you see where your two dots come from on your tie. And they left those two T's in the word for breast. On animals, they call them teeth. You figure out the rest. And the instant that you feed that milk too eventually grows into what they call a tot. Okay? So it goes from the teeth to the tot. And you see those teeth at work. Those teeth are working now, right? Because they represent things that come together as an intersection. To do what? Feed off of each other. That's what the teeth does. It feeds off of each other. You say, well, the mother feeds the baby, but the mother doesn't feed off of the baby. Yes, she does. Emotionally. And psychologically. Okay? But that's for those people who study that. So it's a reciprocal relationship. So that's the other thing that the T represents. It represents reciprocity. Reciprocity. So as you study the Arabic language as well as the English language, pay careful attention to those sounds that employ that letter T. There are two T's in Arabic. There's that ta, and then there's the tau. Right now we're talking about the ta, but the tau has a similar connection. The tau simply represents, if you look at the pictograph, it looks like the English small letter B, tau. And that English small letter B is actually a pictograph of a pregnant woman. So there's your connection, mother and child. Mother and child. So many of the words that employ that letter tau have to do with purity, like the purity of that new life about to be born from the womb. And in fact, the word for purity in the Quran, tahara, means purity. It means purity. All right, so we have the calf at work, connected to your five senses, calf, palm, hand, thigh. Five senses. Tap, connected to. So we already have the idea of your five senses being connected to something. What are your five senses connected to? Created matter. That's your base. That's the house within which you live. The universe itself. That's your house. That's the house that Allah put you on the microcosmic level, your body. Right? So it's your five senses, your sensory perception, connected to all of those things that your body or bodies need to exist and improve itself upon. So that is your kitab. Stop thinking of the kitab as just this book that gives you a two-dimensional reading experience, that you can either understand what you're reading or not understand what you're reading. Sometimes you wind up just going through words and realize that you read several pages and not have comprehended anything. Because it does not represent a fitra experience. Reading is a man-made or man-created experience for you if you're reading from a physical book, whether it's the Quran or any other book. It's a situation that man created for you, like he created this house. It's all right to live in, but it's not the original house. It's not the original structure.
that Allah created for us to live in. And it's the same thing with what we call the bait, or that letter ba. It represents beyond just a house in Mecca, or beyond just the house that you physically live in. Bait represents anything that constitutes created matter. So Allah has connected our five senses to created matter in order to maximize the potential in the human intellect. That is your kitab. That is the kitab that Allah is also referring to when he says, ذَلِكَ الْكِتَابُ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ, that this is the book, and I have placed no exaggeration in this book. In what book? The book of this whole universe. What the sun is what the sun is. What the moon is what the moon is. Right? What the stars are what the stars are. And there's no exaggeration. Man takes it and exaggerates it. He makes the sun a god and calls it Amun-Ra or Mithra or whatever. Man, the lightning, and comes up with Thor, the god of lightning. Allah didn't do that. Man takes what he finds in created matter, and he adds the exaggeration to it. So Allah lets us know from the beginning of his kitab that in this particular reading and the things that this book is going to point your attention to within the context of created matter, what is in the Quran is going to be consistent with the pattern that you find in the creation. Those things he's pointing to in the Quran, he wants you to leave your house, go examine those things scientifically, with scientific interest. Pay attention to creation is what Allah wants you to do. And then you will find out what Allah means by there being no doubt or no raib or no exaggeration within the context of created matter as they impress your senses, as they impress upon your sensory perception. So I'm using some technical language, because if you don't know what they mean, I'm hoping that you just go look it up, that you'll be inquisitive enough and curious enough to go look those things up, right? So giving you just that one word and the connections in that one word kitab, you should be able to spend days and days and days in your Quran making connection after connection after connection, after understanding what those letters mean in that letter system. So, kataba, the palm of the hand, which represents five, which on the abstract level represents your five senses, ta, connected to, bait, created matter. And Karima also mentioned the verse, writing the kitab with your own hand. Allah says they write the book with their own hands and they say, this is from Allah. That's fabricated information. Right? That's information that is artificially placed upon the natural world of reality. So when you begin to see things that are not really what Allah created them to be, which is what depression and stress and all of those other things really are, you live in the same world with the person who is so happy-go-lucky that you're tired of being around. They're just too happy for you. But right next to them is a person who has lost all hope and maybe even doesn't even want to live anymore in a world as beautiful as this, nature-wise. So when they look out at the lake, or at the spring, or at the flowers, they don't see what you see. Because some experience has interfered with their ability to perceive creation in the way that Allah created it, with the beauty and the ecstasy that Allah has instilled upon it. Some other idea has come in to influence it. But that optimism that the baby has for life and for progress, that is the fitrah for human life. That is what we are supposed to carry with us to our graves if we live a long life, a long and healthy life. Anything that interferes with that represents an overlay of information onto the original fitrah information, and now the overlying information has to be exercised off of the template, the original template that we call the fitrah, the original pattern that Allah created. So all you have to do is examine the pattern. That's what the psychiatrist asks you. How have you been behaving? What has been your pattern of behavior?
And when you begin to identify things in your life that do not represent normal, quote-unquote, behavior or natural behavior for a natural human being, he said, ah, here's the problem. And the problem might end up being your mama, your wife, your husband, that third child that you had, right? Your neighbor, or something that happened to you when you were too young to even consciously recall it. Something they have to bring out of your subconscious sometimes to determine where the mind went wrong in its relationship with natural creation. But unfortunately, we have people who have all of these PhDs and these other degrees sitting in these places as psychologists and psychiatrists who themselves are crazy. So we're trying to get sane going to some crazy people. Not all of them, but too many of them that have been. Hmm? How about that? Right, because they have extracted God, so they think, out of their practice, as was mentioned earlier. And that is a very important key for us to end on. The reason why the world is as messed up as it is in the measure that it is because people who have set themselves up as overseers of life and society, who believe that just a few people should run the whole show called life on Earth. And believe me, if they could run the show from on other planets, they do that also. They're really attempting to do that as we speak. Yeah, if they could find out, they found out that there's some water on Mars, so they said there must be some life. So the same man that's been regulating life here on Earth and causing Earth to become so heavily burdened by their foolishness that they say the Earth is now off its axis, is beginning to tilt because of the foolishness. And Allah tells you that would happen in the Quran. It says that the Earth will have to throw off her burden. She is going to shake and quake because of the mess that some people have made of this earth. Right? They've taken the spiritual life out of the material and social existence. They have taken the moral and spiritual ideals and values and have extracted it from the material and the social concerns of human beings and human life. And because of that, they cause an imbalance in the human life. Because they've trained most of us to lean specifically towards the materialism and the socialism of life, devoid of spiritualism. But Allah created us as human beings to be mostly spiritual creatures, although we inhabit these material bodies that have social functions, that have a social relationship with other people. But your primary life is the spiritual life, the life of your soul. They'll tell you there's no such thing as a soul. Or they'll give you some materially based idea about the soul. The soul represents the first breath in the newborn baby, and then your soul leaves you at death. The exploration is that last breath, and then there's no more soul. There's nothing else to worry about. There's nothing but the grave. So soul becomes reduced to a physical idea that exists for as long as you are a physical person on earth. That's their scientific definition of soul. That's why we have to go to the Quran. We have to go to previous scriptures and ideas in order to get the most excellent example or explanation or definition for what Allah means when he says nafs or soul. The nafs or the soul. Allah said he created us all from one soul. And then he divided out of that one soul two components. One male, one female. Partners. Zawjain. Right? And then from there, countless other human beings of both male and female gender. So we have to go to the Quran for our science and for our scientific explanations for created matter. We can't go to this world. They've split us up and have most of us thinking that this is all about the Benjamin. This is all about how much money you can make. This is all about the biggest house you can live in, the biggest car that you can drive, the biggest woman that you can get, the biggest brother you can get, right? They've exaggerated everything out of its normal or natural capacity. and they induce in us a particular kind of greed that the material life in and of itself will never be able to satisfy. So you go on searching for this ideal man, this ideal woman, this ideal car, this ideal house, this ideal existence, and it doesn't even exist. You chase it forever until, as Allah says, you find yourself at the grave. At the grave. Then the reality will hit you that you died lopsided. You died with two physical legs, but no legs morally or spiritually. No legs at all. You died an invalid, spiritually speaking. So that's what we have to correct. Keep the balance, is what we're saying. Keep the balance. Do not allow the culture to divorce the two mates that Allah created to be together, called your material life and your spiritual life. Do not allow them to be divorced based on the information fed to you from this culture. Keep those two things together, regulating each other. Just as Allah created your salat to be a spiritually rewarding exercise, He also created that salat to be a socially rewarding exercise. Allah, in those so-called rituals that we're given in Islam, has created rituals for us that represent spiritual evolution or growth, as well as social evolution or growth. And we're told that if we make that salat in congregation with other social people, we get more blessings. So it's not just a spiritual exercise. It's the balance of the spiritual and the social life being brought together, being married to each other, so that the proper human life can be attained, that we call human excellence. So we have to keep those things in mind. Keep those things in mind. And I think that's enough for you to go on today. Right? Approaching the 2:30 mark here in New York City, Eastern Standard Time. And I think you've gotten enough to chew on to take you from here into the next 5 or 6 days of Ramadan. And inshallah, after the Eid is upon us and is over with, we're going to go full-fledged into some other different and varied areas of Quranic logic. So stay tuned to American Muslim 360. Those of you who are tuning in late, I apologize. We're not going to go until the 4 o'clock mark today. So, inshallah, whatever you've missed, you'll be able to get it on the recorded version by going to Blog Talk Radio on your internet, Blog Talk Radio, and putting the name Imam Benjamin Bilal in the search box on the right, and you will be able to access all of the recorded information that we have available for you from this radio show, and even before that as guests on other people's shows who were on American Muslim 360. American Muslim 360 is doing an excellent job. Our producer, Thomas Abdul Salam, we take our poopy off to him. And he had a vision, not just him, but he's a primary person. He had a vision of bringing a da'wah effort, taking it off of the public streets and putting it in the public airways, like other intelligent people do, so that people from across the globe can access that same information at exactly the same time you're accessing it. And you're causing a major revolution and evolution in information when you do so. All right, so we thank him for that. We thank Allah for blessing him to be inspired in that way. And whatever we can contribute to that effort in order to broaden the scope of people who understand what al-Islam is for real, and for us, it has been based on our experience under the leadership of Imam Warathuddin Muhammad and all of what the history of the growth and development of this community has entailed from the times of his father, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his mother, Clara Muhammad, and all of the pioneers, sung and unsung heroes of that movement, Minister Malcolm Shabazz, and all of the rest that you don't know about. We ask Allah to bless them, to bless them. Open up the doors of paradise wide for them, for the sacrifices that they made. Forgive them any sins and shortcomings that they may have committed, and bless them to have entered his paradise. We want that for them, and we want for us souls, we souls who are still walking the hills and valleys of Mother Earth, trying to complete this mission. We pray that we will work together in what it is we need to do. The full report of this convention will be brought to you via Muslim Journal and via the website of Mosque Cares. I'm not going to be the one to give commentary or full commentary on that. I will have commentary on that the next time that we meet next Sunday. And a lot of it will be good, and some of it will be a pull-up. A pull-up. Because there are also things that have happened that are not worthy of this history. It is not consistent with where Imam Muhammad was taking us. So I would be less than genuine not to speak on those things. In fact, I came here specifically so that I would view and experience firsthand what other people were telling me about secondhand and thirdhand. So if you can trust anyone to bring you accurate information, you can trust us here at American Muslim 360 to give you the whole picture. But not for criticism's sake, for constructive criticism's sake. Because all of us, whether we realize it or not, or like it or not, we're all in this thing together, as the OJs used to say. All right? So, bearing that in mind, let us make a short dua. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Rabbana atina fid dunya hasanatan wa fil akhirati hasanatan wa qina adhaban nar. Our guardian Lord and Evolver, give us the excellence of this life and give us the excellence of the latter life, and save us from the torment of the blazing fires of our own passion. Alhamdulillah. Ramadan Mubarak. And Assalamu alaikum. And don't forget your Organo Gold Coffee. It's been working miracles here at the convention. Look me up on my website, benbilal.organogold.com. benbilal.organogold.com. Assalamu alaikum.